Let's bring in Ray Ferraro on Overdrive, brought to you by Valiant Financial. Ray, are you like a fair-weather Italian soccer fan? Or are you going to pretend like you're really rattled that they didn't make the World Cup? Where do you stand on this?
No, I'm not. That's not very solid. That's disappointing.
Not happy.
Not happy. Back to 1982 for me.
Really?
When they won, Paolo Rossi was their striker. And the Italians have always got some kind of mess around them, as you may know. Not always the smoothest thing around. Like, Rossi had just come back from a gambling suspension, which is so Italian, right?
Yeah, I love it.
Gambling suspension.
You know, and a match-fixing thing, and I don't know how long he was suspended for, but he came back, and they won, and I remember everybody in Trail, which at the time where I grew up was, you know, about 75% Italian. People were driving around and honking their horns. And my buddy's house, where about eight of us were watching. It must have been like 10 in the morning when the final was over. My buddy's dad went in and pulled out like 4 7-Up bottles, which were full of his homemade wine, which I don't even really know if it was wine. It was terrible. But it didn't matter. Everybody was so happy. So this sucks. This is not good.
This is, like, I guess, kind of serious. Does the coach have to, like, move to Nebraska to a small town? Or, like, he needs to get the hell out of there, doesn't he?
I would say that's probably the end of his international coaching career.
It's amazing.
I don't think that, like, they don't even get, in most cases, they won't, like, something like this is a catastrophe. They won't even get another sniff. Like, he's done.
Oh, you can't. The players are going to get run off.
But that's the thing. Like, we can't joke about it, because there have been, like, players and stuff that have been killed.
Murdered.
And, like,
yeah,
like,
shot.
Like, not, I'm not going to point to anything, but it just, I remember reading stories about it.
Do you remember, I think one of the best 30 for 30s I've ever seen is called The Two Escobars.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when the World Cup, was, I think it was 84, was in the U.S., and Colombia was supposed to be an amazing team, and Pablo Escobar, the drug lord, was, they were heavily involved, I guess you could say, and then they lost one of the games, and there was a defender whose last name happened to be Escobar, and he scored an own goal, and they were eliminated, and when they got back, eventually, I don't even know how much longer, he was shot and killed in a parking lot.
That's right. I remember that.
It was a brilliant piece that they did. But man, it's serious business, man. It just won't feel like, well, certainly not in my lifetime. I think the last time they missed was 1958.
Yeah, 1958. Yeah. No, I'm with you. I'm not Italian, but I have a lot of Italian friends, and it makes the World Cup and the Euro just more exciting when they're in it. And just simply to be that guy, I chirp away, and I hate watch. I want to see them lose so that I can chirp my buddies, because I know they're so into it. And even though I'm kind of basking in this, I'd rather they got in and then really were horrible.
And really tanked?
Yeah. And
you're a rotten person.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I know that. But, you know, and Toronto's such a great city in terms of the Italian community, and it really gets buzzing, man. You go down during the World Cup to
college
or St. Clair or whatever. I mean, it's a great spot to watch a game. It's just not going to feel the same way. There's no way.
No, it is. And the worst part is, so you can't fix it. It's not like you can make a couple trades or, you know, whoever you got, that's who you got. You can't say, oh, we got to go get, you know, a couple new midfielders. Well, mm-hmm. You can't trade for two guys from Spain, right? They're either in your country or you're not. That's what you got.
That's what Canada needs to do. We need to trade for Ronaldo and Messi and
just give them Canadian passports.
Give them, like, all the oil we own, a couple forests. So, you know,
you're really building a long range plan here. I
yeah.
like it.
It's just my lifetime that I really care about. Anything beyond that isn't my concern. Anyway, we were talking about the Leafs and the different stages that they've had already into this season, where they started off so hot and they were kind of playing a shinny style. Like, it was high scoring, entertaining. They were scoring a lot. They were winning a lot. And then it went south on them. They lost 5 of 6 in regulation. Panic started setting in. And then Matthews gets injured and they win 4 in a row. And everyone's quieted down, and now they've got some time off and people feel pretty comfortable about where they're at. It's not quite like a year ago where it was a roller coaster almost from start to finish, but there's been some high wire acts already, and I kind of expect that to be the case with this team all year. I'm not sure how predictable they're ever going to be.
I don't know how anybody can be super predictable or consistent over long, long periods of time, although Tampa's, I mean, they got two regulation losses so far. So I would say that's a pretty damn good first quarter of the season they've had. But so many of the teams are so close that you don't even have to be bad on a certain night. You can be just a little bit off and you lose and then you fall into a little tailspin. I mean, who expected that, you know, the Leafs without Matthews coming off that road trip and, you know, they come back and win the first game, but who expects them to win three straight without him? I mean, I don't think anybody did. And, you know, I thought Marner really got going on Friday night, and, you know, he set up the two late goals, the late one, and then the overtime goal he was in on too. And then now, you know, you can see he's probably feeling it a little bit. They'll get Matthews back whenever he's going to get back. Although this must hurt your MVP conversation. Because
it does.
Yeah.
Remember when you had that out 10 days ago, you had said because of what he means that him being out of the lineup will help his MVP, except now they won three straight.
Well, I think actually what it did was it just accentuates the importance of goaltending. And
yeah,
ultimately, your goaltender really has to be your MVP. You mentioned Tampa a moment ago, and Stamkos and Kucherov have been spectacular. Vasilevsky's got a .930 save percentage. So you want to rack up a couple of losses? Give me an .890 for a 10-game stretch.
Yeah,
I'll give you losses.
Yeah, you don't have a chance.
You don't.
And then, so they go in on the back-to-back, and McElhinney plays the way he played. And so now we're not, you're not hearing about Ben Scrivens, or Ben Scrivens. There's a name from the past. Pickard from the past, right?
Yeah.
You're not hearing about him so much. And whether he's doing well or not, it, you know, that eases that conversation for a little bit. And, man, that I was thinking today when I was just reading some stuff, the comfort level of a backup goalie must be about zero, especially around Toronto, where it seems to be, you know, the one place that everybody's got, you know, well, one of two places everybody's got a microscope on, not in the third pair defense, right? Everything mm-hmm. else is, you know, is relatively stable or takes care of itself, but there'll be a new problem to look at up front eventually. But, you know, McElhinney plays two good games. He probably can't even really exhale at all, can he, Noodles? Like, he's not that comfortable.
Yeah, he should. I mean, if I was...
Yeah, but can you?
No, but if I was Steve Briere, the goalie coach, and Mike Babcock, I'd be very happy with his work, and he should be able to exhale, but everyone wants to talk about what they don't have. Let's not forget that Pickard's not... He didn't win the Vezina last year. He played 50 games for the Colorado Avalanche, which were the worst team since, what, the Atlanta Thrashers? No disrespect,
yep.
Ray. That's,
yep,
that's
yep.
just the truth. So, you know, it's not like Pickard is you know, the next coming. He's a good goaltender. I think he's a terrific number three. And like Steve Briere, I know that Steve Briere, he doesn't get enough love. Like, he's a really good goalie coach. He's a progressive goalie coach. And people discount the fact that Curtis McElhinney has a good relationship with Frederik Andersen. Like a veteran goaltender that works with another veteran goaltender in Andersen, that relationship is not, it's discounted a lot. I think when you had Bebo and you had Sparks, guys who were just trying to be in the NHL, that wasn't good for Freddie Andersen because those guys aren't going to help him out. They're not eyes and ears for him because they're so terrified to just be there every day. That's where a guy like McElhinney can have that confidence because he's been an NHL goalie for a long time. So to your point, Ray, yeah, he's probably looking over his shoulder because of the market he's in, because they made that trade for Pickard. But I think he should be comfortable that he's played two good games. He's got two wins and one loss. Like, that's a pretty good ratio for a backup in this market right now.
You know what would help is, I think, anyway, we sit and dissect everything everybody says now because that's, I guess, what sports radio is these days, right? But wouldn't it be nice if after the game Saturday, if Babcock came out and really pumped his tires?
Yeah.
As opposed to saying, yeah, he was yeah, he did a good job. You know, we kept lots of shots to the outside. How about Hainsey and Zaitsev and Komarov, how they killed that 5-on-3? Like, I know he only made two saves there, but he made 36 other ones.
Yeah. He should have came out and said that, and he also... Yeah.
What's up with Hainsey playing, like, the full 2 minutes on the PK? I've never seen anything like it. I think it's a trust factor.
It's
either that or sending a message to Lou saying, get me another defenseman that can kill penalties, because it's crazy. It doesn't make sense.
Well, eventually the wheels have to fall off, don't they? I mean, he's not like he's 28.
No kidding.
And so I do think there's, you know, there is a little bit of the second part of that statement you made, where it's like, okay, if Polak can't do it, we got to find somebody else here. Somebody else has to be able to take some penalty-killing minutes. And I know they don't use them at any, you know, he's certainly not going to get on the power play, but those are, generally speaking, pretty hard work minutes when you're killing as much as he is.
Well, that was a big kill. And listen, Komarov, he was right in the kitchen of Marchand and that Bruins lineup, top line all weekend and certainly on Saturday night. And a lot of people are focused now on the Marchand kiss on Komarov.
Those two guys are a couple of jackasses.
They're both the same. They're both cut from the same cloth.
They're so hateable if you're a fan of the
other
team.
Yeah, exactly.
So hateable.
Could you imagine if they were on the same team? Oh, they would drive everyone bloody crazy. Oh. They really would.
There would be fights all day in practice.
But they would love it. Those two would love it. Like they're Ray, you were laughing when he was saying, "I'll send over a stick." He was yelling to Komarov.
So good. I'll send one over to you. If you want, I'll autograph it and send it over.
He is pretty quick.
It's so, I don't know, they both do what they do extremely well. It's amazing for all the high-priced talent and or media discussion about certain players. The guys that Babcock, you can tell he loves are Komarov and Connor Brown. And they're like, and Hyman, they're like three guys that are always kind of under the radar a little bit. They're very consistent. It's kind of like the old lunch pail gang. And he really has an affinity for those guys. They've done a good job for him, but he's really got their backs too.
Yeah. Those are his grit grinder types that he doesn't think gets enough attention, and he's willing to pump their tires. Like we talked about McElhinney and how he kind of went out of his way to promote other players, but he'll go out of his way, even when he's not even provoked, to talk about the three guys you just named. Brian Burke was in town this morning, and he was on with Naylor and Landsberg, Landsberg in the morning, and he was asked about Sam Bennett. We talked about his discussion about the Toronto media, and Burke's been down this road so many times before, and we'll get into that later in the afternoon, but Sam Bennett is a former fourth overall pick. He's into his third season. He's coming off...
Stormed into the league, too.
Well, in the playoffs, they called him up as an 18-year-old.
Because he was injured really that whole good. Season, and then, yeah.
Yeah, and he looked really, really good, and they're high on him, and I understand why you want to protect him, but he was asked about Bennett's season so far and just how it's being handled in Calgary, and here's what Burke said.
If he were in Toronto, they'd have traded him 70 times, shot him 6 times, condemned his parents 4 times. Like, mm-hmm. No, this is... Sam has had a tough start. Mm-hmm. We really think the world of this young man, and he's going to be fine. But, it's a better market. If he was going through that here, he'd be getting crucified.
So he obviously has a pretty jaded view of Toronto, which you can understand based on his time here. But in what professional sport does a guy with 1 point ever get left off the hook? Like, why would people in Calgary not be concerned? If they're not concerned about this guy, what the hell are the media members doing in Calgary?
Well, I wouldn't know that. Are they on the payroll?
No
kidding. They're supposed to be writing, although. You know, I did find it pretty interesting right around the municipal election there that all of a sudden all the sports-related articles had started to, the Flames are doing everything they can and they deserve a new building. And, you know, like the tone of it had all switched once the Flames started advertising for the other guy who didn't win in the arena. Like, it's kind of a, you know, Noodles, you live there, so maybe you have a better handle, but it's kind of a muddled sort of deal there. That's what it appears like from the outside to me. Like the Flames actually put on the board, you know that they supported, like they ran an ad for the Smith guy
Bill
that was
Smith,
running against,
yeah.
against Nenshi. And so, like, all of a sudden, the Flames, obviously, they're leaning that way because they're like, somebody knew we might have a better chance and we're running into this roadblock with the other guy. And then the article started to come from the media about, very supportive of the Flames' position. And then, Brian makes these comments today. And I don't know, Sam Bennett's he's a young prospect. He's a 21-year-old kid that's got 1 point. And if he wasn't the fourth overall pick, he probably would be in the American League.
Yeah,
no doubt.
I mean, why else would you have him there? If he's not producing, wouldn't you want him to be put in a spot where he can be successful and kind of find his game again? Because 14 games is, you're now into 5-6 weeks of the season, and he's got one assist.
Yeah.
It starts to play with your head. Aside from the obvious, you start to look around the league and go, oh, my God, I got less points than that guy. That guy's got more goals than me, which, of course, is everybody that has one. But, it's this thing, Brian, we should know, he likes the hyperbole. He likes to, he likes to make the case. But he's right. There's more papers. There's more media in Toronto, and there'd be more articles, just like there was last week about William Nylander and 2 weeks ago about Tyler Bozak and
Mitch Marner.
Next week will be about somebody else.
Yeah.
That's the way it is.
There's another first round pick right beside him who I thought was really going to turn it around in Calgary with like a second chance. Curtis Lazar.
Yeah.
Out of Ottawa. Oh. He's got one assist too.
He got one assist and can't find a spot.
Yeah, a consistent spot.
Whatever it is, he's kind of bouncing around a little bit. He hasn't played enough. Curtis came out, and he kind of got into that early to the NHL thing, and then they didn't think he was ready, but it was too late to send him down. And then they sent him down the next year, and they had three injuries. They called him back up, and it's like he never has the puck on his stick. And so he's got to find out, and the teams have to find out, exactly what he is. Is he an offensive guy? It doesn't look like it. It doesn't look like that. Is he fast enough to be a checker? I mean, I don't know. He's got to find something to find something, because right now he's kind of an afterthought there too.
Well, when you think about it, Ray, and this is, I mean, you're on that platform. The World Juniors is such a big platform for hockey in Canada. And when you excel at the World Juniors or have a real good showing, people just expect that, you're going to play like that at the NHL level. And I look back to guys like, remember Max Domi? People are like, oh, this guy's going to be a 100-point guy in the NHL. No, he's not. He's a good player.
Remember his other winger? Is Anthony Duclair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Duclair. I'm thinking Jake Virtanen, another guy in Vancouver, starting to come into his own. Curtis Lazar. Like, the World Juniors is such a big platform, and we get to see it right in front of our eyes, these kids growing. But it doesn't always translate that success to the NHL. And Lazar, to me, I mean, Ray, you did a bunch of Ottawa games. I did a bunch with him. Yep. He's a really bright kid, and he wanted to be, from the drop of the puck in the NHL, he wanted to be that 200-foot responsible player. And it took away from some of his offensive game. But I don't think he was a prolific scorer at the NHL level. Like, he in junior, I think he was a 45 or 50 goal scorer in Edmonton, but that doesn't translate always to the NHL. He scores his goals 10 feet into the net.
Well, the other problem becomes that the tournament is, it's just over 2 weeks long. And so if you happen to be, if you catch it right, everything falls for you in those 2 weeks, there's a perception that you might be more than what you are. And I mean, there's other guys as well. I mean, Mark Stone, we talked a lot at his World Junior year in Edmonton about, gee, I wonder if he's going to be able to skate, because he scored a bucket load of goals. And then look at him now. He's got 12 goals this year already.
He's a hell of a player.
It's different. Yeah, it's different for each guy. But, if you're a marginally top-end scorer, like you're not really a top-end scorer, but, you score enough in junior, chances are you're not going to do that in the NHL. And so you have to define what you can be. And I think Curtis got stuck a little bit in the middle, and he just kind of lost it. And now he's got to find himself before he can really be good enough to make an impact. And at some point, you got to be honest with yourself and say, okay, this is my best way forward, whatever that might be.
Well, he's lucky he's not playing in Toronto, because he would have been shot six times by now.
And what was going to happen four times?
His parents would have been assaulted condemned. Or something like that. Condemned. Yeah. Yes. Very lucky to be in Calgary.
Oh, super lucky.
Yeah. It's just a hell on earth here in Toronto.
I'll tell you one thing. You better not be spouting off any more about the Italian soccer team, or else it's going to happen to you, Hayes.
I know. I know better than that. Although I'm basking in this, I'm so happy.
We don't even need to do toilet bowl tomorrow. It's just Italy,
the whole country, the whole country.
Whoa! That's a little.
We
harsh.
Didn't see how they lost, but it wasn't a guy shooting
zero,
it at his own.
Zero. They lost 0-0.
Toilet bowl Tuesday.
How do you lose
we're going to do
zero
you,
because
Joe from the Bridge, and Andy Petrillo for toilet bowl Tuesday.
Yeah, they had to, I guess, win outright to qualify, and
they lost 1-0. Yeah, they lost. In the two-game aggregate, which is the goofiest thing, they lost 1-0. So they were eliminated 0-0 today.
Well, it was the opposite for TFC last week. They lost at home, but they got through because they won on the road with more road goals.
Yeah. Which is so ridiculous.
Yeah. The scoring on the road
So a goal over there is more than a goal here. It's so ridiculous.
Yeah. That's the way it's always worked.
I'm changing the soccer world now. We're going to move on to soccer now, guys. We're fixing hockey. We're going to move on to soccer.
All right. We'll start that tomorrow at 5 p.m.
That'll be perfect. We'll talk to you then.
All right. There's Ray Ferraro on Overdrive, brought to you by Valiant Financial. For fast approvals and competitive payment options on heavy equipment from any dealer, visit valiantfinancial.ca.